Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. A generation in danger across Florida. A new investigation shows that disturbed kids are increasingly dreaming of shooting up their schools.
Yeah, teenagers across Florida sling violent threats at students and teachers. Most of the time, it may be just teens acting out. But the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, in an investigation, found that a disturbing number of these threats come from mentally impaired children who are fixated on violence and have easy access to guns.
Right. So just how safe are Florida's kids when they're in the classroom? We're beginning the hour with a closer look as we speak with Megan O'Matz, reporter for the South Florida Sun-Sentinel and their investigation. Megan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me on your show.
And we want to hear from you, Florida. What are your concerns about classroom safety? Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800 and tweets to @FloridaRoundup. So, Megan, you pored over court cases in 10 different Florida counties to see just how big of a threat violent kids might be in the state schools. What did you find?
Well, these records point to a real mental health crisis with children in Florida and around the country, we believe. We were really surprised and shocked to see how common these threats are, the depth of despair and anger with children. We basically found that these children are everywhere. Highly disturbed children are in our schools. And we think that parents and school district employees, everyone should understand the depth of this problem.
Right. An astounding...
My colleague, yes.
Yeah, a real array of disturbing cases across the state in all types of schools, all grade levels. You were mentioning your colleague a minute ago. Any particular cases
Brittany,
you want to highlight?
Brittany Wallman. Yes, exactly. We kept talking to each other when we would look at these records and say, oh my God, look at this case, look at this case, look at what this child is saying and threatening and posting online and texting and showing pictures of themselves with guns and begging for help, saying, you know, I wake up thinking that I want to kill someone. And some of these children are reaching out for help on Reddit, on social media, saying, how do I get rid of these thoughts, these urges? And we were just very, very stunned by what we were reading and seeing in these records.
Right. The despair, the rage so many teens are expressing is alarming, and it's prompting calls for a real campaign in this state to meaningfully address kids' mental and behavioral health issues. Let's talk about that, because as you mentioned, access to care, kids getting mental health assistance, is a huge public health problem in Florida.
It is. It is. It's very difficult for parents to access care. And we put a lot of burden on the school districts to help these children. And they don't have the resources. They don't have enough mental health staff and psychologists and psychiatrists for these children that have so many problems. We're finding that parents themselves are very frustrated. They don't know or can't afford access. They don't have the insurance. A lot of psychiatrists won't even take insurance anymore. The children we saw have very deep problems, and you really need a lot of coordinated care to help these children, and it's hard to get. It's hard for parents to access that.
Let us know your thoughts if you're a parent listening right now, a teacher, or you just have a concern about school safety. The number to join the Florida Roundup is 305-995-1800. We have a call from Sherry in Tarpon Springs. Sherry, you're a teacher, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's correct. I teach chemistry, and I've been teaching for 21 years, and I've noticed that one of the biggest changes for young people is they brag and think it's wonderful to stay up late and play video games all night, and they're on their phones. They're not sleeping. They're not going through that growth and repair cycle that they so need for that brain development. And if you're replacing that with, you know, very violent video games, which is cool amongst, you know, teenagers today, and that's how they communicate as well. They have, like, headsets on and talk to each other, so there's a social aspect. And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with what we're seeing in our community.
Sherry, thanks for the call.
Sherry, thanks.
Megan, let's talk about what's driving despair and rage among teenagers, not just in Florida, but around the country. The warning signs that a child might act out are the same as they've always been, and you write about this in your piece. Kids that make violent threats, obsess about weapons, favor violent programming, threaten or attempt suicide, abuse of animals. These are all warning signs. But what about, Sherry, our teacher's comment? How much is screen media, does the data show, contributing to kids' depression and anger?
Well, just playing video games alone does not make a child want to threaten a school, as far as we understand with the research. But it is a mystery of what is causing more children to be diagnosed with what's generally called conduct disorders, whether you want to call it ADHD, OCD. We've seen things called intermittent explosive disorder, things that, you know, I certainly had never heard of before. And some of the same traits that we were seeing in the records are the same traits that the Parkland shooter had: emotionally disturbed children, tormented by mental disorders, lacking the proper medication and therapies. They're obsessed with death, and many of them had dark grudges that they were holding against teachers or classmates. You know, there's a lot, it's a mystery about why so many children are feeling like this or experiencing mm-hmm. these disorders. And it could be, yes, it could be, as Sherry talked about, all this violent media that children are exposed to. There's also, you know, more chemicals in our food anymore, our air. There's, you know, drug addicted parents. A lot of children are born with disorders. And, you know, I think there's a whole mystery about what's causing this.
Sure. But as we study that, the other side of the equation, as you have been reporting, is that more than half of the kids who've been identified as potentially being a risk to themselves or others have easy access to weapons, right?
Oh my gosh, yes. It was very disturbing to see how many of these children had weapons in their homes, even including assault rifles. There were two young boys that were home posting pictures with assault rifles on Snapchat, and their parents had these rifles under their bed. I think really parents, if you're having these guns at home, and really you shouldn't if you have a disturbed child. I believe if you have a child, you know, like this with these kinds of disorders, it would be best not to have weapons. But, you know, please lock them up if you are intending to have these weapons. We found that the kids were, even when they're locked up, they're finding the combinations to the safes. They are finding the keys when dad is asleep. And it's just very dangerous to have children with these kinds of such serious mental disorders have easy access to weapons.
If you're just tuning in, as we speak with Megan Omatz, reporter for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, about their investigation into teens at risk of killing their students, their fellow students in school. In a moment, we'll ask Megan about how the state's red flag laws are addressing these cases. Let's go first, though, to Kathy in Delray. She's on the line. Hey, Kathy, thanks for calling the Florida Roundup.
Hi, thanks for addressing this issue. You know, I think it's important to know that we're not just talking about high school students. We're talking about, where does it start? You know, people in their teens aren't just going to wake up one day and say, "Ooh, I'm going to go kill my classmate." You know, and the reason I say this is I have a daughter who's in fourth grade, and she was bullied for first and second grade.
Mm.
So the school did not address it. I had to threaten legal action before this happened. And this is a private school. This isn't even a state school.
I'm so sorry.
You know, yeah. So, you know, you're looking at it from two perspectives. You know, you have the bully who's, why is the student becoming a bully? Where is this behavior coming from? What's causing it? And how do we stop it so that when they become a teenager, they're not like that?
Yeah.
And then you look at the child who's been bullied. And I hate to use this phrase because it's thrown around so readily, PTSD. You know, my daughter is on such edge now that she responds negatively to a lot of stuff, as opposed to saying, you know what, maybe the person's having a bad day. Let me give them a break. Like she used to. So now this person, my child, if I don't intervene and I don't continue to intervene, she could become the one who's retaliating for something. So now you have two students who are being affected because maybe the school wasn't equipped to know how to discipline, how to step in and offer the social services or help the student who's going through some pain.
Right. And Kathy, as you point out, this is a problem in not just public schools, but private schools, too. And I so appreciate you calling. And I'm so sorry that your daughter had to go through that. Unfortunately, a lot of kids are. That's Kathy in Delray. Megan, your investigation in the South Florida Sun Sentinel shows this problem is evident across all types of schools in Florida and all grade levels, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Private schools, charter schools, public schools, they all have children who are making these kinds of threats and have serious problems, mental health problems. The thing with the private schools is they, they don't really tolerate it. They will just expel the student, and they can do that. But the public schools have to provide a free and appropriate education for every student. And so, yes, you do have probably many more of these students in the public schools because they can be ejected from the private schools more easily. And basically, we did find that, yes, this starts in elementary school, and we were very surprised by how many young, very young people were making threats, were bringing guns to school. There's something now where a lot of schools, especially the elementary schools, they do room clears when children will have these meltdowns or temper tantrums where they are throwing desks and pulling things off of shelves and breaking computers. Teachers are very limited in what they can do. They can't really put their hands on children anymore. You're not really allowed. It's frowned upon to restrain children. So they evacuate the room of every other student to disrupt the learning of everyone else while this very disturbed child has a meltdown. So as your caller said, yes, children in elementary school are being forced to deal with children who have some of these severe conduct problems. And the schools, early on in the elementary schools, the schools are trying to identify children and get them the services they need. But resources are limited.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Phone lines are open, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or you can send us a message on Twitter. Our handle is at Florida Roundup.
All right, let's go now to Erica in Miami. Erica, you're a clinical psychology professor, is that right?
Hi, yes, I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and an associate professor of psychology at Florida International University. I really have three main points in response to what I've heard so far. The first is there's been a lot of equating mental illness or mental health concerns in children with violence. That's just categorically untrue. Youth with mental health concerns or mental illness are at no greater risk than the general population for engaging in violence. The second main point is that the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is our sort of handbook for diagnoses in the field, has no diagnosis that's associated with things like being a mass shooter or being at a high risk for violence among youth at school. There's just no diagnosis that fits that nicely. My third main point, though, is that while both of those first points are true, South Florida is at a great need for increased mental health, A, awareness, and B, services, because I work at Florida International University as a clinical psychologist at the Center for Children and Families, and we have a huge number of youth that we serve through our clinic, but thousands and thousands more who need services, and they're just not available.
Right.
The schools are overtapped, there aren't enough counselors, there aren't enough school psychologists, and there just aren't enough staff and services available in the community either. So while these are interrelated problems, I just want to make sure that we're not equating mental health concerns or mental illness with violence or violence risk.
I thank you so much for pointing that out. Megan O'Matz, let's talk about this, because when we discuss this issue, it is important to note that just because a child is suffering from mental health issues doesn't mean that they will become violent. And I know mental health professionals have been concerned about this perception for a long time. What about that?
Well, that's of course true. Yes, if you're mentally ill does not mean that you are likely to be violent. But when what we're talking about is it only takes one child in these schools, as we know from the Parkland shooter, to devastate a whole community and families. And this is there. We have to be aware of the risk. And the issue that we want to get across is that you must identify children that are a risk and get them the help, so put them on the right path so that they don't have these grudges and urges and these resentments, and that they can get the right help. Because clearly, children are crying out there. They're posting all of these threats, and there is something going on. This is not normal. And there, as a society, we have norms for society to function. And really, you can't go around threatening to kill people. I mean, that is just, we can't have that happening in our schools. Other children have rights to be safe and to learn in a safe environment.
Sure. And the huge issue that I think we're all taking from your excellent reporting is access to care and lack of resources for children and adults to get mental health assistance and counseling. Let's go quickly to Jan in Merritt Island. Jan, go ahead.
Excuse me, did you say Merritt Island?
Yeah, go ahead, Jan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dan, I guess my name is.
Oh, okay. Jan. Sorry about that. We're just on the fly here.
Sorry, I'm a physician, and I do think there's two very strong aspects to this. One is the lack of resources. Right now, here in our county, we don't even have the resources to fully evaluate the patients that are hospitalized urgently under the Baker Act for acute mental illness. But more than half my patients have mental illnesses of various kinds, have no health insurance at all, and therefore no access to basic care.
Right.
You know, and I think
Yeah, absolutely. And Dan, we're close
exactly.
to a break. So let me get Megan to react to that. Florida must grapple with this, Megan, and increase access to care. Certainly, that's what the professionals are saying.
And we've been hearing this for many, many years, and I don't know, our politicians, don't seem to be addressing it sufficiently. After the Parkland shooting, they did add more money for mental health care in the schools, but we're hearing from experts, like your caller, that it's still not enough. I mean, we should treat mental illness like we do other things, like heart disease. I mean, you need to have great coverage for this. I don't know why we don't. It is a dire need.
It's a huge public health concern in Florida. And kudos to you, Megan, and your colleagues at the South Florida Sun Sentinel for uncovering this. It's a statewide investigation into classroom safety here in Florida. Look at it online or pick up a copy of the South Florida Sun Sentinel to learn more. Megan O'Matz, we thank you so much for being with us today on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but continue looking at the issue of school safety. In a moment, we will take a look at why a state grand jury has criticized several Florida school districts for not following the laws that were put in place after the Parkland mass shooting. These were laws designed to make schools safer. How safe are our kids when they are in class here in the state of Florida? That's the question. We want your calls here on the Florida Roundup and tweets as we keep discussing this. Call us up now at 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. More to come. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We are talking about school safety this week. The South Florida Sun Sentinel published an investigation into violent threats leveled by school kids. Many times the threats were serious enough for police to use a new red flag law in Florida passed after the Parkland shooting, trying to keep the young people away from firearms.
That's right. And separately, a state grand jury recently criticized several school districts around Florida for not following state laws that were enacted after the Parkland shooting. These were laws designed to make schools and kids safer.
Yeah, a lot's been happening here as we are kind of ending the calendar year for schools. I know that a lot of folks are looking ahead to the holidays, certainly, as school time here in 2019 winds down. So how safe are the classrooms in Florida? Has the interaction between schools and police changed since Parkland? You know, share your experience as a teacher, former teacher, a doctor, a parent. Maybe you're a former student in a public school, K-12, or a charter school or a private school. 305-995-1800 to share your experience. 305-995-1800. Maybe you're a school resource officer or a law enforcement officer. At Florida Roundup is our Twitter handle if you'd like to join us there. Mike Chitwood is the sheriff in Volusia County. He joins us on the telephone. Sheriff, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Let me ask you, have you used in Volusia County red flag laws with school kids?
We have used it on at least one person this year.
Can you tell me about that case?
Yep. We had a young man who threatened to shoot up the school. I can't remember whether it was another student or a teacher. We went to his home. His mother informed us that he had access to firearms and there were firearms present in the house. And with that, we then were able to get a court order to seize those weapons. And the case is still winding its way through the court system right now.
What was the nature of the threat? You described it there briefly, but how was the threat leveled?
I'm not sure. Oh, it just came back to me. The threat was leveled in a computer chat room, a game chat room, where he was chastised by other people in the chat room who then notified the FBI of his threats to bring his father's long gun to school and shoot up the campus. Hmm.
Donna Berghauser along with us as well. Donna is a licensed school psychologist, past president of the Florida Association of School Psychologists. Donna, thank you for your time here on the Florida Roundup. When you hear the sheriff's story there in Volusia County about that one particular threat that the sheriff's office has gone to court to use the red flag law, what occurs to you about that story, Donna?
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you so much for having me. Just my reflections is that that is likely a very extreme scenario and thankfully a very rare case. But, you know, thankfully there are systems in place where people in the chat room have avenues to report, especially the importance behind that because statistics show that many of the school-based shootings that have occurred across the nation, 81% of the cases, people knew about them happening before. So really informing the community, the importance of being aware, seeing something and saying something certainly comes to mind first.
In the Sun Sentinel investigation that was published this week of 10 counties, their data found a sharp increase, Donna, in the number of students making school threats or threats against their school. Why do you think that is? Is it more sensitivity post-Parkland that these threats are being captured now, or is there an increase in these kinds of threats in your estimation?
It's always difficult to tell, right? So I think that there is a level of comfort as well as just a level of awareness. But on the flip side, I will say that sometimes the amount of information and the sensationalization of some of these media stories can actually desensitize people. But nonetheless, in terms of the occurrences, I think that at times, too, students don't always have the proper language or they don't understand the severity and the seriousness of the threats that they are making or the actions that they're taking. And so sometimes, to put it in a counter perspective, you know, we might encounter students at school who are very frustrated, who are upset, who are in extremely frustrating situations, and they might use terminology like, oh, I want to kill myself, I just want to die. But when you speak to the students and you find out the root of the problem, you realize that they don't have true suicidal ideation. It's just that they didn't have a better way of expressing that. And I can see that sometimes, you know, things may come out in a very aggressive manner in that circumstance with students. But also there are some of those who will make those statements without really any true intention, but not thinking through the ramifications of making such threats.
Sheriff Chitwood, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. And in addition, what we read this week from a state grand jury that really took to task a number of larger school districts about some of the crime data that those school districts have been reporting to law enforcement.
I agree very much with what was just said about some kids may not have the right or do not have the right equipment to express themselves so they blurt out whatever. The problem on my end is I don't have a crystal ball. So if you stand up and tell the teacher I'm bringing my gun tomorrow to shoot you in the head, I can't take that risk after doing an investigation. It's best for us to charge and then allow the social service and the court systems to come together and figure out what column that person falls into. Is it a teen court case? Is it a criminal case? Or does it fall in a mental health case? But either way, once that threat comes out, and I'm reading through my stats here, in 2018, we made 133 arrests. And so far in 2019, we've made 66. And the major charge that we filed is a threat to discharge a destructive device. The device, 790.162 in Florida statute, is the one we really use the most because it is a bomb or a gun that they threaten on social media or verbally.
Sheriff Chitwood, let me ask you, how is that getting reported by the school districts? Because this second interim report from this state grand jury that was released this week really took to tasks a number of school districts for, in the grand jury's estimation, manipulating crime reporting data.
I have no doubt that that's being done in different districts in the state of Florida. I mean, I know I can't tell you how they're reporting it. I can tell you how we report it. We're reporting it as a felony. A juvenile is charged with a felony under that statute. I don't know how Volusia County schools compare with us, but I know there is a push on to, and I think you're going to see this, it's a matter of time before there is no law enforcement officers in schools. It's going to be all guardians. School guardian is what you're going to see statewide. And when that happens, school guardians don't have the power to arrest. So they'll be at the mercy, and the call to law enforcement will be at the mercy of the principal, as opposed to when you have a deputy or an officer on, they're making that call based on the law.
Mike Chitwood is along with us. He is the sheriff in Volusia County. Donna Berghauser is also with us here on the Florida Roundup. She's a licensed school psychologist, past president of the Florida Association of School Psychologists.
I'm Melissa Ross. Connect with the Florida Roundup by calling 305-995-1800 or tweet us at Florida Roundup.
Marianne on Sarasota, in Sarasota rather, has been very patient. Marianne on line 3, go ahead. You are on the radio.
Hi, I'm a former teacher who's taught all over this country, and I'm a current volunteer at Sarasota and Manatee School District. It starts in the very beginning. Early intervention is the best solution. You can't catch everybody, but what happens is institutional corruption. Teachers are discouraged to file reports of acts of violence on student or student on teacher because it affects the school's rating with the state. Social services are so overwhelmed with all the drug problems, they can't do anything, and they literally say, I can't do anything. I've been hit by a student this year. Nothing happened. You know, it comes down to people caring. We're 26th in the nation in pupil spending for education. We're 36th in the nation for child's well-being, which includes housing, education, and health care. We talk a talk that we do not walk in this state. We really don't care about these children.
Marianne, we appreciate you sharing.
Children every minute.
Thank you for sharing your story, Marianne. Sorry to interrupt you here. I want to get our folks to respond a little bit to what they've heard there. Donna Berghauser, as a school psychologist, hearing from Marianne, a teacher in Manatee County, saying that was hit this year by a student and nothing happened. In her estimation, teachers are discouraged from reporting these kinds of acts. What's your experience?
I mean, I have to say, I think it's a case-by-case scenario, and every schoolhouse is different in terms of responses. But I would agree with her statement that prevention truly is key. And when we're talking about school safety, you know, we have to think beyond just hardening schools. We have to think about emotional safety and well-being. As humans, people want to feel connected. They want to feel safe. They want to feel supported. And creating school environments where teachers, students, parents, everybody has that sense of emotional safety, and social safety is critical to talking about physical safety here at school as well. You never want a teacher to feel like they're going to a school where they're going to get hit, let alone feel that, you know, there's not going to be any support or consequences. But to the same token, if we have students who lack the social emotional skills to manage conflict, to handle their feelings of emotion and emotions to where they're physically lashing out at people, that's another level of intervention that school psychologists, school counselors, school social workers, teachers can all embed into a school day to help teach kids so that we're not having those kind of problems in the long run.
Sheriff Chitwood, I want to ask you about a real physical presence of school safety that has entered into the lives of teachers and parents and students across the state of Florida since the Parkland tragedy, and that is the presence of armed law enforcement or armed school resource officers. Is part of the first law that was passed immediately after the Parkland tragedy, public schools and charter schools were required to have school security resource officers in place. And this grand jury report out this week really took to task school districts, saying, quote, with state level laws have been persistent problems. Compliance have been persistent problems. What's your experience in Volusia County with schools complying with the security laws in this post-Parkland environment, like having a school resource officer on campus?
I have been very lucky in Volusia County. Unlike some of my brethren sheriffs throughout the state of Florida who are bemoaning the fact exactly what that grand jury report said, school districts are not taking this serious. In Volusia County, that law was passed. I met with the then superintendent, and he made a public promise that when school opened in 2018, there would be a guardian or a deputy or a police officer or in every of the 110 schools in Volusia County. And he was good to his word. When school opened, shortly after, I think the law got passed in maybe April or May, they really hustled, and we had an armed person on every campus when that law went into effect. And to this day, we are. We have a guardian force of probably close to 70 guardians, and then the rest of the schools are augmented by my office and the city of Daytona Beach, the land, and some other cities.
Yeah, and Sheriff Chitwood, the guardians you refer to are guardians under Florida law of school personnel that go through hours and hours of training in order to carry a loaded firearm in a public school. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah. We are talking about school safety here on the Florida Roundup. You are listening to the program from Florida Public Radio. Brigida in Gainesville is up next on line four. Go ahead, Brigida. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for hearing me. My comment and questions are, I think the increase of reporting of school violence or school bullying is due to the fact that we are losing lives. But I also think that these problems as bullying have always been in schools and present in schools, with the absence of mass killings like we've experienced. I think there still is a large amount of stigma associated with mental illness, and I think that's probably why our state legislature is dragging their heels. It's often maybe related to domestic violence as well. I don't know, you know, how the mental health stigma problem can be solved if people want to hide it under the rug. So that's really all I have to say, and those were my questions.
I appreciate you adding that to the conversation, Brigida in Gainesville. Donna Berghauser, a school psychologist, respond a little bit to what you hear there from Brigida, especially concerning the mental health stigma. I will share with you that I am the father of two young boys who are still in school, and they're conversation about mindfulness and emotional well-being is something that I didn't possess at their age, certainly. So is this a generational stigma as much as it is anything else? Donna, you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
There we go. Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. No problem. I think, thank you for sharing that in a very interesting perspective. There are a couple of things that kind of come to mind when it's the mental health aspect of school violence or violence just in our society. I think it's important to note that just because individuals may have a mental health condition or a disorder, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to result in acting in such violence. These are very, very rare instances. But nonetheless, I think that we have opened an avenue for having conversations and trying to break the stigmas against mental health awareness. And when we really talk about mental health, it's not just about being in the absence of a mental health disorder, right? Like, we're talking about people's physical and emotional well-being. So, yes, being able to practice mindfulness, being aware of ourselves, having control of our emotions, I think that those are all very, very important. And just relating to the caller's comment that bullying is an issue, and we've had nationwide initiatives to address bullying in schools, but there is also an epidemic in our country about youth suicide, and I feel that we're not doing enough to really support mental health initiatives in schools. And also, there is a shortage of mental health practitioners in our schools as well. In our state alone, students have more access to school resource officers than they do student mental health professionals on their campus. So when we talk about the need to truly address this, we have to funnel funds also into initiatives and providing and having staff on campus who are able to promote emotional wellness on our school campus.
We're going to talk about resources with the state lawmaker here coming up in just a matter of moments. Sheriff Chitwood with Volusia County, I want you to kind of respond to this tweet that we received here from a parent. My child's middle school had a threat this morning. Parents, says the tweeter, you have a moral obligation to make sure your child is not a threat to other children, not the school. Real quick, just 30 seconds here, Sheriff, but what about the role of parents? Have you seen that change post-Parkland?
Amen is all I have to say to that tweet that you just got. The parents' role has changed. Parents are more in tune, I believe. And, you know, mental health plays a huge role in this. And the last thing I'll close with you is this. Remember, we're target-hardening our schools. The enemy is within. That's why school guidance counselors, mental health screening are so important, because the shooter is in that school and knows the layout and knows what he wants to do.
We're going to talk about those resources next. Volusia County Sheriff Mike Chitwood, thank you for your time today, sir. Donna Berghauser, licensed school psychologist, past president of the Florida Association of School Psychologists, thank you for your input as well. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. And as we continue talking about school safety issues on the show today, parents are pouring their hearts out to us on tweets and emails. Here's an email from Megan. Her 14-year-old son, she says, has a long history of mental illness, has been expelled from preschool due to violent outbursts. He's been Baker-acted. She says they're not wealthy and they've had to work a lot of hours to provide for the family, and it's hard to find her son the care he needs. She says her ex-husband has an arsenal of weapons, and she lives in fear of her son becoming a school shooter someday. It is just heartbreaking to hear from parents around the state on these issues. And as we discuss how better resources can be allocated to reach kids who are troubled and might act out, we're so pleased right now to welcome to the show State Representative Chevron Jones, Democrat of Broward County, and a former school teacher. Representative Jones, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for having me.
So we've been hearing all through the hour how desperately law enforcement officials, parents, schools, even students themselves who are troubled are crying out for more help, mental health resources in particular. How do you think the legislature should address this problem? There have been some efforts, but what we're hearing on the show today is that it just doesn't seem to be enough.
Yeah, first of all, there's a clear mental health crisis in South Florida schools. It's a silent epidemic that I believe that directly impacts kids' performance in our schools. But there are a lot of barriers we look at. As a former teacher myself, I saw it firsthand, the shortage of counselors and nurses in the schools, not enough engaged parents, and this conversation that we're not having enough. There's a trauma that's inside of our classrooms that teachers cannot just be teachers. Teachers are teaching, they are parents, they are being counselors. And so what we as a state have to begin doing is, if we're going to put counselors in our schools, counselors cannot be the test givers only. We have to put counselors in the schools who are going to be in the schools to be able to help children when they are in need, when that parent is not in the household. So we have to provide those type of resources. The $69 million, I believe that was allocated last year after Marjorie Stoneman Douglas to the school districts. School districts are crying out to make it very clear that that's not enough. There is more resources that's needed.
Representative Jones, it's Tom Hudson. The governor has proposed $100 million to expand school mental health care. What's the priority for Florida schools? You talk about a mental health crisis happening in Florida public schools. Funds are limited, as you know, but what's the priority for the spend of tax dollars?
I believe the priority for the spend of tax dollars is being able to put specialized counselors inside our schools to handle these various situations. And I'm not talking about just one counselor. I'm talking about the enough counselors for the ratio of students who are in the classroom. We need to make sure that the individuals on there could deal with the childhood traumas that's being dealt with. If we look at what's happening in a lot of our communities, and specifically if you look at communities I serve, within the African-American community, these are traumas that these kids are seeing on a daily basis. And counselors have to be individuals who have dealt with this, who have experience in dealing with these type of childhood traumas that these children are dealing with. Teachers can't teach with this type of childhood trauma that a lot of kids are dealing with. So what should be the first priority is putting certified individuals inside of our schools who can handle these various situations.
And you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Lindy is calling in from Boca Raton. Hi, Lindy. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm listening with a great deal of interest because I'm a retired educator, and I have three children, and I feel like I can fit on this whole spectrum. I've had my oldest child is in her late 30s now. She could have been a Nicholas Cruz. She has, wow. In fact, we had to take her. We went through multiple schools. We finally had to put her in a therapeutic placement. And then I have a middle one, very little issues. And then I had my third one was bullied so badly that going to school, I almost had to quit my job in order to stay home and homeschool her. And we ended up transferring her to another school where it was smaller. But as an educator, I feel like the resources aren't there for the teachers. They're not there for the students. Guidance counselors can only do so much. You tend to have parents who are very demanding, both in mm-hmm. private and public, and it's mm-hmm. difficult.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so you dealt with this as a parent and a teacher, Lindy. You got a double whammy.
Yes, I did.
Wow,
I did as on both ends from my oldest one who did bully, and when I was reading a heartbreaking account in Sun Sentinel of Nicholas Cruz and the way he affected his home life. It was just like reading about my daughter to the point.
How's she doing now?
Unfortunately, we've had an estrangement. She's crossed too many boundaries, so I think she's doing okay from what I gather. That's a whole other issue.
Sure, but I'm so sorry to hear that. And I thank you so much for sharing that with us here on the Florida Roundup, Lindy. So there we have Representative Jones, just like you, a former teacher who really knows this issue well. And so mm-hmm. as you've been saying, the issue is one of resources, and you're getting backup from mm-hmm. the former educators out there.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and I'll be honest with you, it breaks my heart to hear that story, because I have four nephews, one in particular who has dealt with mental crisis after my brother passed away. And my nephew went through a very tough time trying to deal with that. He from suicide, he got kicked out of his school. He's now in another school trying to deal with his credit recovery, and I cried because this is a conversation.
It's okay. A lot of people are crying. It's so difficult. It's so emotional.
it is emotional because it is a conversation that we're not having. And yeah, and again, as a former educator, these are conversations that you just can't have with teachers. These are conversations that we need to have with the principals. These are conversations that we need to have with the school drivers. These are conversations we need to have with the school resource officers. You know, everyone needs to know what this is and what the seriousness of the mental health crisis that we have happening with our schools and our children. And our parents need help too. The parents need help too.
Yeah, across all communities, Representative
all communities.
Jones, we've certainly saw that in stark relief in Parkland and in other communities that have been hammered by violence of all kinds, not just these very tragic, very public school shootings or public shootings like Pulse. And Melissa, there's been one, of course, in Jacksonville in public areas,
mm-hmm.
But in communities that are racked by violence by regular means. Representative Jones, I want to bring back, though, to your experience as a legislator and working with the DeSantis administration to secure more public funding for mental health in public schools. You spoke about kind of the priority being mental health professionals. I have a real practical question, which is, are there mental health professionals to fill the need? And where do those kind of where do the human resources come from here?
Well, and I'll be honest with you, Tom, that's a very good question. I will say this before I answer that question, that this mental health conversation has no party line. I'm grateful that the governor sees this as something that we need to attack head on. So kudos to him and his administration for doing that. When it comes to whether or not we have enough mental health counselors, here's something that the legislature can do. The legislature can work very closely with our colleges and our universities to give incentives to students who major whether it be psychology or whether the individuals will go get their specialist degrees in counseling. We can give some type of incentives to place these individuals in schools. I believe this is something that we can do. If we have these type of dollars, let's use those dollars wisely to make sure that we create a bench of mental health counselors who we can actually place inside of our schools.
It's so important. And, you know, it's not just in schools. I talk to parents all the time who try to find a behavioral therapist for their teen, you know, just somewhere in the community, a private one. There aren't a lot of them out there that are doing this kind of work with adolescents. So the need is great and the pain is real. And so we heard it in the voices of everyone who appeared on the show today, it seems, Tom. This is a serious public health crisis for the state of Florida. So it's good to have everyone on the show to shed some light on it and let people give voice to their experiences because they're very painful.
There are, and brutally honest, and I appreciate everybody who's been able to share those very personal stories, including Representative Jones, your story as well. And when it comes to resources, there's another piece of this that we haven't tackled. We just don't have time today, which is the insurance component of this,
yeah,
right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, you talk about availability of the counselors in the marketplace and the insurability of this to address the emotional health and the mental health. And we've gotten lots of tweets and some social media about folks to remind us that it's not just a crisis. It's not just a challenge in schools. It's not just in classrooms. It's not just in hallways, right? That these are throughout our communities in ways that we may not always be aware have these conversations.
We've got to destigmatize mental health issues and increase access to care for so many people out there. So State Representative Jones of Broward County, thank you so much for appearing with us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And thanks to everyone who called in and tweeted the Florida Roundup. It's produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are producers.
Jason Zapka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our technical director for the hour. The WLRN Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday. Have a great weekend.